We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Helping you unwind after a long day of work.
I think he's kind of a boob.
Can't really take the days off as a person. Can't go out there and be a moron. It doesn't work like that.
The Nightcap.
We're eating their food.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
The Nightcap. We're back. Joe DiBiase and Brendan Keeney here on WGR. Had some fun last night. Release of the schedule. We now know it. So it's kind of... This is like the real NFL offseason to me.
Yes.
There's nothing for... I don't care about your OTAs. I don't care about your mini camps. I know they're not even really real this year. They're virtual. I don't even know for sure because I don't really care about all that stuff normally.
Know what made it real to me? Not the schedule. It was Howard picking the Bills this morning. That's when I was like, "This is, it's finally a new season. It's a new season, and we are now full steam ahead for 2021.
And it's this is the couple of months. This is dry season. What is this? This is today. Undrafted free agents that you've never heard of that you're going to Google and like, oh. Maybe this Quentin Nelson. The tight end the Bills just signed. The undrafted tight end. I was looking him up earlier. Quentin Morris. Bowling Green that they signed. He's a converted wide receiver, played 5 games at tight end in his career at Bowling Green. That's the position that he's going to play in the NFL, or he's going to try to play in. Ran a 4.55. And I'm like,
that's
all
good.
Right, hey,
that's good.
Maybe this is a guy that beats out Tommy Sweeney for the fourth tight end spot that was vacated by Lee Smith with his being traded to Atlanta. That's the kind of season that we're at. Guy we've never heard of and wondering if they can be the fourth tight end on the Bills team that doesn't even have that many good tight ends.
And naturally, fans will fall in love with that one player and
be crushed
when they don't make the 53.
Oh, they'll be mad.
Yeah.
They'll be upset calling for people's jobs when they cut Quentin Morris, who...
Brandon Riley.
50% of people, just when they heard me say Quentin Morris, probably formulated their entire opinion on the player by the words converted wide receiver. Like, that's all that anyone's going to think about with him, probably, going into training camp and roster battles. I do think that's the one position. Corner two. They signed two corners in undrafted free agency today. We're not going to spend almost any time on this at all because there's the schedule still to talk about. We should talk about Jack Eichel at some point in the later half of today's show because we didn't do any of that yesterday for obvious reasons. I think tight end is a position where an undrafted guy can win a roster spot on this team, and I do think cornerback is a spot where that player can do that as well. So,
let's get at it.
All right. Joe DiBiase and Brendan Keeney, 803-0550 is the phone number. So I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm looking at an exercise me and my brother did a couple months ago that we talked about. We both made fun of my brother for putting Lamar Jackson over Josh Allen, our 25 and under quarterback rankings. And now that we're looking at the Bills schedule, and we're looking at the AFC, we're looking at strength of schedule, playoff picture, what record is good, by the way, because that's a new thing. Like, is 11-6 a good record? Because 11-5 used to be a really good record, but is 11-6 a really good record, or is it just okay? Is it just pretty good? So we've got to formulate what that means now. And I'm looking up and down the AFC, and there you've got a real barn burner of a conference coming your way in the next couple of years. But here is the thing, and the Bills will play a couple of these guys on the schedule this year. They will play Zach Wilson and the New York Jets twice. They, I think, will play Mac Jones twice down the stretch. Jones isn't a good, I shouldn't have brought him up for this point, though. They will play Trevor Lawrence in the midseason. They will not play Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow. But what all of those quarterbacks to me have in common is they all have elite ceilings for being a young franchise quarterback in the league. And I think all but Wilson we're pretty sure are really good. Like, I think we're all pretty darn sure Trevor Lawrence is going to be a franchise quarterback in this league. Maybe he's not the best quarterback in football. He's a franchise quarterback. I think we're all pretty darn sure Joe Burrow is going to be around for a long time. I think we're all pretty darn sure Justin Herbert, who has the best rookie season we've ever seen, maybe, statistically, last year, is going to be around for a long time. And Zach Wilson maybe gets to that level also. Here's the thing, though. The Bills, for now, exist on this pedestal with the Chiefs. And I think I want to throw the Browns and the Ravens there as well, but maybe not quite to the same extent. Like, it's really the Bills and the Chiefs up top because...
Yeah, it'd be Chiefs space, Bills space, then Browns and Ravens.
And a lot of that is just those two top teams, Kansas City and Buffalo's, ability to throw the football. You've got a lot of teams down the conference that have been dysfunctional organizations for a long time. The Chargers have been dysfunctional. The Jets have maybe been the poster child for dysfunction. The Jaguars have been dysfunctional. The Bengals have been dysfunctional. They all maybe have their franchise quarterback of the future. Will they ever get it together? Because if they do that, a couple years down the road, this could be a gauntlet for the Bills when they're competing year after year. Maybe not in the division, because Zach Wilson's the only guy that I think right now presents the ceiling that Josh Allen had when he entered the league. But you know what I'm getting at? Like, this conference, if those teams continue to stay and can't get off the mat, they can't build around their quarterbacks, then it's going to be the Bills and the Chiefs going at it year after year.
Yeah.
But if those teams figure it out the same way the Bills and the Browns did in their front office and their head coaching staff, then you could have 4, 5, 6 teams all competing year after year to come out of the AFC.
I don't even think they need to necessarily figure it out as an organization, these dysfunctional organizations that you're talking about, because I think once you have that franchise guy as your quarterback, you've kind of lucked into a period of success in some form. Maybe not a Super Bowl contender, but I'll try to... The best days of Andy Dalton, the Bengals were good.
Mm-hmm.
So even in those days, they were never going to win a Super Bowl. They were never that good. But they were good. They were a force to be reckoned with in the sense that they'd win, you know, 10, 11, 12 games a season. And they I believe they won the division a couple times with Dalton. Like,
yep, I think at least once.
If these guys... And he's not even what I would call a franchise quarterback. He's below that tier, or was below that tier. And now he's completely, you know, it's just too old now. But I think they don't even need to really figure it out and have this crazy organizational shift like the Bills did in order to be good. All you need is that one piece who is an elite level talent at quarterback for you to get out of the basement. And that's what we think all these teams have. Joe Burrow by himself will, if he plays, if he keeps improving... He had a good rookie season until he got hurt.
Yeah, if he stays healthy.
If he stays healthy, if he keeps improving, if they protect him just a little bit, that's all they need to do. We're not even talking about like having this amazing organization. Just get the guy a left tackle.
Get him a tackle. Really.
Then you're talking about getting out of the basement. And you, what? That's probably, Joe Burrow by himself is worth probably a 500 record. If he turns out to be as good as we think he is. I think a lot of these teams lucked into these quarterbacks, and it's going to be a lot of fun in the AFC for years to come.
Yeah, because especially, it's going to be fun. It's not going to be fun maybe for the Bills as much if those guys hit and those teams really can build around them. Because how many teams do you see in the AFC right now where you don't know what their route is to getting a franchise quarterback? Denver right now is that. That could change with Aaron Rodgers, of course. But right now, they don't have that in the works. The Raiders don't have that guy in the works.
And Denver and the Raiders, kind of to add on to this, they're both 500-ish teams
right.
that are not going to be picking at the top of the draft.
Right. Roethlisberger and the Steelers. He's at the end, so the Steelers at this point don't have that guy on the roster going forward. The Patriots with Mac Jones, he seems to be capped for how good he is, so I don't think I want to throw him in the same category as these other quarterbacks that we're talking about. And I think I want to say the same about Tua. I think Tua's ceiling at this point, just because of the arm strength, just looks like it's gone because of maybe the double hip surgery. I think, or the broken hip. I think that he could be capped as well. So you've got like four teams that maybe they're limited, but their guy might be sticking around for a little bit longer. You've got the Titans and the Colts, who are kind of, they're in a weird spot to me in that Tannehill has been so efficient. Fifth best QBR in football since he got to Tennessee. But it's every time I want to say, but it's Ryan Tannehill. At some point, come on, that's coming back to earth. And he's also not nearly as young as a lot of these other guys we're talking about. And then Wentz, kind of the same thing. Like, maybe that bursts into flames, and he's gone in a year. And even if it works, he's 4 or 5 years older than a lot of these guys that we're talking about. So you've only got a handful of teams in the AFC that don't even have the potential for this meteoric rise at their quarterback position like a lot of these teams do. You compare that to the NFC, and there are, you've got Washington right now, who doesn't have their franchise quarterback in place. You have the Eagles, who don't have their franchise quarterback in place. The Giants don't have that guy in place. The Lions do not have that guy. The Vikings with Cousins probably do not have that guy. Kellen Mond's a third-round pick. I'm not counting that at this point.
The Saints.
The Falcons. I think the Panthers with Sam Darnold.
Hey, even the Buccaneers.
The Buccaneers, right, with Brady.
I mean, like, they have Brady for now, but like, how long is that really going to last? We'll see.
He's 43, 7 years.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they do have their long-term.
But you're right. But yeah. You see what I'm saying? Like, I got to more than half the NFC pretty easily there.
The Seahawks situation's iffy with Wilson.
Yep. The point here is, and right, even the guys that are good in the NFC, Rodgers, if he's still in that conference, old. Russell Wilson.
Older.
He's in his 30s.
Yeah.
Matt Stafford is in his 30s. Brady, we just mentioned, is in his 40s. Matt Ryan's in his later 30s.
Right.
Goff is approaching 30. Cousins is in his 30s. Fitzpatrick's in his later 30s. Where is the influx of young quarterback talent in the NFC? This draft, they finally added two. Trey Lance in San Francisco and Justin Fields in Chicago. That's like it. That's it. So all that to say that now you look at the AFC and it really looks daunting, I think, going forward. The good news for the Bills is, and we could kind of turn this into their schedule here a little bit, their division doesn't look as daunting as the rest of the conference does. Because I mentioned, I think Zach Wilson has a ceiling similar to that of Justin Herbert and Josh Allen. That's a big-armed, big quarterback, athletic. He can make every throw on the field. He's got to put it all together, and the team has got to put an offense around him and weapons around him where he can succeed. But the potential is there. I don't see that potential in New England right now. And here's the thing with Tua and the Dolphins, and I wanted to get to them here because Armando Salguero was on the station earlier today, and they've kind of been on my mind all afternoon. And kind of thinking about this point, look at all the quarterbacks in the AFC. Look how high the bar is. Look at the benchmark you've got to clear for quarterback play in this conference. If I'm the Dolphins, Tua could even look pretty good next year. I've got two first-round picks coming up, and I will start to think, if I'm the Dolphins, I've got to do better than this. If he's just Tannehill again, which is a guy that takes care of the football, he's pretty good, but
he'll get you to the playoffs here or there.
But he's getting beat every time by the Mahomes and the Josh Allens of the world. And if I'm Miami, seeing all these other young quarterbacks in the conference, this is why I would have picked one this past draft. I think they could very well be on to a new guy next year. Does that sound crazy to you that next year
they're
on to a new guy?
I think Tua's style of play lends him...
It's not... modern day.
It's not.
Go ahead.
He's accurate. And I think that if they have the weapons in place, you can hide his deficiencies. And maybe that's kind of what you're getting at. I don't want to have to hide the deficiencies of my quarterback when I have to play Josh Allen, potentially Zach Wilson, everyone in the AFC North except for Ben Roethlisberger, and the entire AFC West. I mean, that's going to be I can't wait to see Herbert and Mahomes go at it for 10 years. But I see what you're saying, and I think that's it's a point that's well noted, because to me, the Dolphins are a great example of an organization that has kind of put it all together. We're talking about the bottom dwellers earlier in the show and the dysfunctional organizations of the AFC, but the Dolphins, within the last couple of years, have been a team that's put a ton of talent at various positions on the roster. They've invested in the offensive line. They're getting weapons for Tua, but there is deficiencies with the quarterback, and how far can that get you? So that's why I'm really interested in the Dolphins this year. How far can a quarterback with limitations compared to the quarterbacks like Mahomes and Allen, and even guys like Lawrence coming up, and Burrow, who are just better passers, better throwers of the ball, can make more throws. Make more throws. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a good point. But will Miami be good enough to hide his deficiencies? Will they have an accurate assessment of who Tua is?
You know what I kind of want to do right now? Because it's changing gears a little bit, but we're talking about the AFC as a whole, the Dolphins too. While you were speaking there, I'm thinking, are the Dolphins even good enough to get in this year?
Like, yes.
They came very close last year, but I kind of want to play that out. So why don't, you know what, it's our show. We can do whatever we want with it. So let's just pick the playoffs for the AFC this year.
Okay.
1-7. I'm going to bring up real quick, just to have it in front of me, conference winner odds, just to get a good idea of like what Vegas thinks. We'll start at the top, because I'm more interested with this exercise about Miami and further down. For the one seed and for the first round bye, because of having the third easiest schedule in the league, and the fact that I think Aaron Rodgers is going to end up on the Denver Broncos, and if he doesn't, he's going to end up on the Las Vegas Raiders. He's going to be in the Chiefs division. I'm putting the Bills as the one seed.
Okay.
In the AFC this year. I'm not saying I think they're a better team. Right now, well, I guess maybe the one seed's more important to the Bills, because
the one seed's incredibly
I was going to tell you, I was going to say, playoffs, I'm still picking the Chiefs. But if that game's in Buffalo in a full capacity crowd, I might have to.
And you
pick
don't have
the Bills.
To. And you are the only team with a bye?
You're the only team with a bye, also. Well, I was saying in a vacuum, Bills, Chiefs, I'm still taking the Chiefs. But I'm picking the Bills to be the one seed more because I think the division is easier.
Yep.
And I think the schedule is certainly easier if you look at it from win percentage last year. That could change, but we'll see. So I'm going Bills 1. Would you do the same, or would you put Kansas City?
I think they're interchangeable. Bills, okay. Or Kansas. We're not talking about them missing the playoffs. They're not on the
right.
Bubble, so I don't think it really matters.
Okay, so AFC North winner, I think, is probably the 3 seed. Would you agree?
I don't
think the South winner is above the North winner.
And I'm going to say the Ravens for this one.
Until
the Browns prove they can win the division, I'm just going to stick with the Ravens.
I'm going to go with the Browns. I think the Browns had a really nice offseason. I think I love their defense. Beckham is back. I don't know if that's a good thing. It should be a good thing, but I don't know.
Can we agree that the second place of the AFC North is likely the 5th seed of the playoffs, though?
I have the Ravens in as the 5 seed.
Okay, well, then I'll have the Browns.
The 4 seed as the AFC South winner, I have the Colts. It's a lot of Titans hate for me. I don't necessarily love the Colts, but I think the Titans are taking a big step back this year.
Okay.
And I'm not there with Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars yet.
Like, I'm not giving up on Tennessee. I still think they're a good team, even though I despise them. Tennessee is my 4 seed.
Okay. So we both have the second place AFC North team as the 5.
Yep.
I have the Ravens. You have the Browns. So now we've got 6 and 7. Here are the teams that we could still be considering. We could be considering the Dolphins, the Broncos. I just told you I think Aaron Rodgers ends up in the AFC West with the Broncos or the Raiders. The Patriots last year had 7 wins without a bunch of guys who opted out, without any weapons on offense. They've replenished that at least to some extent. They also have an easy schedule like the Bills and the rest of the AFCs do. The Chargers have a 9-win over-under. They have a quarterback that could ascend that team to really even conference contention, let alone playoff contention. The Steelers, I don't think, are in this conversation, but it's still the Steelers, and I'm sure
still the Steelers.
There'll be people out there.
Figure it out, man.
You've got the Titans. You've got the Raiders, who are in the Rodgers sweepstakes. I don't think they end up with him. And then further down, you've got teams that I wouldn't consider playoff-worthy yet, the Jaguars, Bengals, Jets, and certainly not the Texans.
Going through that, it is blatantly obvious that a couple of very good football teams are missing the playoffs.
Yeah. I'm going to go Denver at the 6 here. And I have to stay consistent. I think they will end up with Aaron Rodgers. So that's kind of an asterisk there. That's an asterisk. I'm picking the Broncos to be the 6 seed if Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback. And that might even be light, having them as the 6.
That might be. They might.
Well,
do I want to say they'll challenge for the division if they have Rodgers?
They will challenge for sure. I still think Kansas City would come out on top. Now, they're the 6. I would tell you they're probably 2 or 3 games better than Indianapolis or whoever's the South winner, at least. So I have Denver there. And then, man, do I want to go with a third AFC West team? I like the Chargers. I wish they did.
You think the Chargers, with 4 games against Rodgers and Mahomes, can make up the ground against, like, Miami, who has the 4th easiest schedule in the league?
That's really what's holding me back. It's the combination of that, and I wish they did. Couldn't they have? They needed to give me one more big skill position move in the offseason. They built up that offensive line in front of Justin Herbert. They helped out the defense a little bit. I don't like their head coach hire, by the way. I think Nick Edwards is the guy's name. I keep forgetting it. Rams defensive coordinator. Hated that hire. If they had hired Brian Daboll and done one more thing at, like, wide receiver behind Keenan Allen, then I would pick them to make it, but I'm not going to pick them to make it. So I'm kind of stuck on who I think the 7 seed will be. Who's your 6 while I'm thinking?
I am not going to assume that Rodgers is going to be a Bronco. I'm going to say Rodgers stays in Green Bay, that your 6 seed is the Indianapolis Colts and your 7 seed is the Miami Dolphins.
I'm almost trying to avoid getting to Miami here, but I don't know if I can.
I think Miami is in for sure. My debate's between Indianapolis and the Chargers. I am not as sold on Indianapolis as everyone else, and I really like the Chargers. So actually, I'm going to switch mine. I'm going to say the Chargers, Dolphins, interchangeable at 6-7.
Broncos and Chargers would be interchangeable for me. If Rodgers doesn't end up in Denver, I would pick the Chargers for sure to make it. Man, I might pick New England over Miami.
Ugh. Are you buying into them?
It's just, you know what? I'm not buying into them as much as I'm buying into, I like their quarterback situation more than Miami's.
Come on, you do not.
I think I do.
You do not.
I think Newton is probably shot.
Okay.
There's a chance he shows up, looks healthy, and is better than Tua. And when that probably doesn't happen, they go to Mac Jones. I don't see much of a difference right now between Mac Jones and Tua. In fact, I think Mac Jones is a better deep ball passer at this point than Tua Tagovailoa is. So, I don't know if that's crazy to say.
They don't have the weapons to even matter for them to have a deep ball passer. Nelson Aguilar? That's their get?
Well, that's the tight ends. Well, deep ball doesn't matter. You're right.
I think people are going way too hard on Tua. Here's what my assessment of Tua. Tua, to me, will never be an elite quarterback. But he also won't be a bad quarterback. Cam Newton was bad last year.
That's what I think of Mac Jones. I liked Mac Jones in the pre-draft process. I thought he was getting too hard at time.
So I guess much of a leash does Cam Newton get?
Well, that's the thing. If he looks bad early, I think he gets pulled. I think Belichick will do that. And that's why I might pick New England. Because I don't... It's not if Newton was their only answer, if they had not drafted Mac Jones, I would not be telling you that I think the Patriots are over the Dolphins. But it's Mac Jones, and I think their defense is more real. than Miami's. I think Miami's was a little fluky last year with turnovers, big return yardage from their defense, whereas the Patriots were pretty good last year on defense and were dominant the year before that. And last year, they just didn't have the bodies that they got back this year. So, I'm struggling with it, but I think I would go New England. I would go New England over Miami as my seven.
I'm not getting there in Tennessee. I believe Miami is opening up as a road favorite in New England.
Ooh, I just had that in front of me. I can tell you right now, they are a... Why are they all the way down?
Yeah, of course. Got to scroll.
New England's a 2.5-point favorite. That line may have moved, though.
It definitely moved.
I think I also saw that the Dolphins had opened up as a favorite. Well, that would tell me, though, that the money then was coming in on New England.
The Dolphins are minus 115 and the Patriots are minus 105. But the Patriots...
So it's basically the same.
Are 2.5-point favorites.
That just must mean the money's coming in on New England side. They needed to change that. So... Vegas thinks they're about the same. I'm looking at DraftKings Sportsbook right now, and odds to make the playoffs in the AFC. Patriots, yes, is plus 137, and Miami, yes, is plus 130. They are almost identical. So Vegas thinks of them as almost the same team.
What is, just out of curiosity, what are the Bills on that site?
To make the playoffs?
Yeah. Minus 250?
Minus 375.
Okay, jeez.
Yeah, they're pretty confident that they're going to make it. That's going to be it. That's going to be such an interesting game week one.
Minus 375.
Yeah. Wow. Week one, Jets and Dolphins. Or Patriots and Dolphins.
Patriots and Dolphins. I like it.
It's, you know where it really came down? We're going to take a break here, and then we're getting a little hockey as we progress here. But I think you know what that conversation really became is you were defending Tua a little bit. I was defending Mac Jones a little bit. Both guys are getting a lot of hate. I think both are probably going to be about the same. They're going to be fine. They're going to be okay starting quarterbacks in the league. I don't think either has the Allen, Zach Wilson, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence ceiling.
I agree with that.
But also, I could see both being starting quarterbacks in the league for a while. Is that where you were on Mac Jones, or were you a hater on Mac Jones?
I'm not a Mac Jones hater, but I agree. I see him more as a game manager. And goes back to just being an Alabama quarterback with everything just handed to you in terms of an offensive line, in terms of weapons, in terms of head coach. Yep.
All right, well, there was our playoff projections, our very early playoff projections. So we'll take a timeout here, and I do want to talk some about Jack Eichel because we have not really done that this week yet. In fact, we haven't because I was not here Monday and Tuesday, and yesterday was all about the schedule. So we'll talk about Jack Eichel, and I've got some odds, speaking of odds on Jack Eichel trade destinations. And you'll never, if you've seen it, you'll believe it. If you haven't seen it, you won't believe who like the third, fourth, and fifth teams are. We'll do that when we come back here on the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase and Brendan Keeney here on WGR.
To be fair, I think there's enough teams with enough space, and if you do it early enough, I don't think it's nearly as big of a limiting factor as many would make it out to be. You look at the broader picture of the league, and even looking at this year with a flat cap, the number of teams towards the bottom of capfriendly.com that have significant space, it's only going to get better.
Frank Saravelli, TSN, on with Howard and Nate Geary this morning. Check that out, Odyssey app and WGR550.com. Was listening to Puck Soup, podcast that Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, Ryan Lambert, formerly of Yahoo, and Sean McIndoe from The Athletic do. And they were tossing Eichel trade destinations around today. I've got odds in front of me. I'll read in a second. But they were belaboring a point that I thought about yesterday, but they made me think that it's more possible than I once said. That Eichel's on this team next season.
Okay.
And it's kind of a, like, cooler heads prevail, a couple of months go by, maybe Eichel's neck starts feeling better, maybe they let him have the surgery, and next season shows up, he's still not traded, and Eichel and the Sabres go, let's put this off. one more year. Like, maybe we're good this year. Maybe that changes opinions. And for Eichel, if I'm Eichel, I maybe want to wait till next year. Maybe that's why he has not officially asked for a trade yet. Because right now, the Sabres can go, all right, our best offer is from Anaheim. Enjoy the Ducks. They suck. that's your new team. Enjoy the Kings. They've won one playoff game in the last 7 years. Enjoy the Senators. The Sabres can send him anywhere. And if I'm Eichel, I want some say in that matter. And he won't have all the leverage, because the term on the contract, he'll never have more leverage than the Sabres do. Even next year with the no movement clause, Eichel can go to the Sabres and say, I'm only going to Boston. You better trade me to Boston. The Sabres can go, well, you're a Sabre till 2026.
Yep.
They can very easily say that. But there would be gained leverage, because Eichel could then nix a trade. If he did want to be traded, but the Sabres are about to send him to Calgary, then Eichel can go, I'm not going there. Like, I'd rather be here. And that's why I think there's a chance that this whole thing gets put off. And Cervelli, talking about the surgery earlier, and an unnamed GM in the league telling him that Eichel is untradeable, in part because of that surgery, only adds to my thought that there's a better chance than we're all giving it credit for, because of Monday's Zoom call being very fresh on our minds. There's a better chance than we're all emotionally reacting to him being traded.
I definitely think there was overreaction, but I also think it's still a better than not chance he's gone by the time the season starts. But I want to hear these odds, because I'm curious.
All right, so the top two teams won't surprise you. Rangers at plus 250. These are a bet online, by the way. The Kings are plus 300.
Okay.
Those are the top two teams. Now, you might be surprised, though, that the next few teams, the odds are not much longer than that. It's not like some steep drop-off. The Arizona Coyotes are plus 400 to be Jack Eichel's next team. These are only if he's traded. That's why the Sabres wouldn't be listed here. The Arizona Coyotes. That, again, that's a trade where, does Eichel even want to be traded at that point?
Right.
You want to go play with Phil Kessel and probably miss the playoffs as often as the Sabres do, almost?
He might want to go to Arizona.
Maybe he wants to go to Arizona. Maybe. It's a little warm there. A little too warm, maybe. But yeah, like, it's not a great landing spot. The Bruins are plus 500. I think that's absurd, because there's two things wrong there. I don't think the Sabres would ever trade him to Boston in division like that, to a rival like that. And two, they don't have the pieces. All of their prime value pieces that they would move in a trade are older. Bergeron is older. Marchand is older. And I don't think they'd move Pastrnak. So if he's off the table, which I'd imagine he would be, that means the Bruins are off the table. That's why I think they're only on that list that high, because he's from there.
Right.
Calgary is plus 600. Again, they've kind of got the pieces. They're in position to blow it all up, because that's how they've been talking for 2 years now, and they missed the playoffs again this year.
So that, like, getting rid of, what, Monahan, Gaudreau?
Maybe Matthew Tkachuk.
I'm very intrigued.
I know.
Matthew Tkachuk.
I'm trying not to fall for how much I love watching him play to what the real value of that player is. Yeah. He's a very valuable player. He's not some elite generational piece, though.
And he's not a center.
But Tkachuk is interesting. Gaudreau's in the final year of his deal, so I don't know how interesting he is compared to Monahan, who's got term and is a center and is younger. But Calgary's got some pieces, but again, that's Jack going, do I even want that at this point? Do I want Calgary? Minnesota, another team Cervelli mentioned earlier today, they're plus 800. Again, that kind of fits for Eichel. They're good. Kirill Kaprizov is great. He's driving a lot of their success offensively, but do they have the pieces to get Jack Eichel? Because Kaprizov might do it, but again, that's the guy that's kind of driving the bus right now.
Right, they might look at that as an even trade.
I wouldn't, but they might.
I wouldn't.
They might,
but
you're right.
Right, it might. It's one of those things where it probably doesn't make sense for either team.
Minnesota has been searching for that number one center for their entire franchise existence.
Yeah,
now.
Absolutely.
And maybe they would be swayed by that. It's only been 1 year of Kaprizov. So maybe they would be willing to do that, but I would doubt it. Detroit, plus 900. Eichel want to go there? How much sense do they make? I'm poking holes in a lot of these teams to kind of show that I don't know that the timing makes sense here. I don't know who.
But you keep saying, why would Eichel want to go there? Like, he doesn't have a choice right now. So if you can trade him,
right? That my point would be, why would he force the Sabres' hand to trade him if these are the teams he'd be going to?
I see. So but here's the thing: like, he might not have to explicitly ask for a trade for the Sabres to be ready to move on from him, right? So
fair.
He might not even, that conversation may never actually have to happen. If Kevin Adams is approached by a team like LA or New York that seem to make the most sense because they have what appears to be the most amount of young pieces that would make sense for a Sabres rebuild again, then he might be hard pressed to say no. Because what if he does ask for a trade? And you brought this up earlier. The ball's still in the Sabres' court because of the long-term extension that Eichel signed.
Yep.
So he doesn't have to go anywhere. But that, we already seen what happens when a player has a new no-movement clause and how that hampers the kind of return you can get.
Just happened with Taylor Hall. The difference I would want to point out there, which is obvious, is that he was an incoming UFA.
Sabres'
hand was forced there.
For sure.
Whereas here, again, they could go. I made that example earlier. If Eichel comes to them next summer and says, I want to be a Boston Bruin, the Sabres can say, well, you're a Sabre till 2026.
Yeah.
So, but you also make a good point about, you know, the no movement clause can get tricky. That can, that all that will do or can do is eliminate bidders. And that will cause the price to go down. And that is not a position the Sabres want to find themselves in.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Is like,
yeah, okay.
I think that automatically decreases what you can get on a trade if he has a no movement clause.
Let me just run through the rest of these teams real quick, and I'll let you pick apart whichever one you want. This is a little further down. Plus 1,000, Columbus. Plus 1,400, Philly. Plus 1,600, Washington. Plus 2,000, Chicago. Plus 2,200, Montreal. Plus 3,300, Toronto. Those are the only teams listed.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get traded to the Leafs, the Canadiens, or the Bruins.
Montreal's the only team that has even one thing going for them, and I think it's the young pieces.
Caulfield.
They're not quite to the Kings and Rangers level.
Suzuki, right.
Suzuki and Caulfield and, like, a couple of firsts. But you've also got the same points that the Bruins stuff was working against you. It's in division. And that I think the Sabres would be hard pressed to send him to Montreal. It, by the way, if they are in the same division.
Where do you stand on this? Now, here's a qualifier. Assuming Eichel does not want to be here long time, he doesn't ask for a trade, but he's not stoked about being in Buffalo for a long time, and you get approached by the Kings, I'll use for this example, and they say, we'll give you Byfield and or Turcotte or whatever trade that seems to make the most sense for an Eichel kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you on that? Knowing that his no movement clause, and I'm saying that's for this summer. They approach you this summer and they offer one of or both of those pieces plus others, and you know the no movement's coming up next year, and you think this might be the best offer that you could get.
I think if the Los Angeles Kings, if I'm Kevin Adams, and tomorrow morning I wake up to a text message from the LA Kings and their general manager, is that how they do trade negotiations via text? That's how I do fantasy offers. Let's say I wake up to a text from the Kings GM, and it's, all right, let's do this today. Byfield, Turcotte, and 2-1s. That's the text. I think tomorrow I'm taking that deal. It's about as good an offer as I think you're going to get.
That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Does
the price possibly go up?
And I think, no, I don't think the price goes up. And I think you could even next year, if this is still hanging over their heads, I mentioned this earlier, I think the Kings could be a team that Eichel says no to, that he could nix a deal to. Because if he wants to be on a contending team, how does the LA Kings make sense for that?
Right.
They are an aged core that has won one single playoff game since 2014. The last 7 years, they have won one playoff game. They missed the playoffs this year for the third year in a row. They made it in 2018, but they got swept in the first round by the Golden Knights.
They have some bad contracts.
Bad contracts. Jonathan Quick, bad contract. Drew Doughty at this point is a bad contract. Anze Kopitar is still great.
Yeah.
That's all they're riding on. Cal Peterson's okay, too.
And
but,
we talked about this earlier, too, off air, but you're literally trading the assets that would bring the Kings back into a younger core, have
right.
relevancy now in a trade for yourself. And is that something that you're interested in doing?
It's a good question. All right, 803-0550 is the phone number. Any thoughts on this? Last call in the nightcap after this on WGR. Last call in the nightcap, Joe DiBiase, Brendan Keeney here on WGR. Last thing for tonight, because we got to be quick here. Home game and road game that you're most excited for the Bills this season?
Road game, obviously the Chiefs. I think that's just...
Is it obvious? Because I think I would pick Tampa.
Okay. That you, yeah. All right.
It's a very personal... distaste for Brady,
and it's a team
Brady,
that you haven't
course.
Seen in a while.
And
yeah.
it's a team you might not see again
for a while.
Yeah.
All right, I'll side with you on Tampa. Home game.
I think Kansas City would be the more popular choice, though.
Home game, Monday night football against the Patriots.
That's your home game, number one?
Yeah.
Mine would be Pittsburgh. It's just week one. It's going to be a party. It's going to be 1 o'clock.
Oh, for sure.
It's just going to be nice out. I just know it. It's going to be 75 and sunny. It's going to be great. Just the right amount of clouds.
They need to build.
What is the right amount of clouds? I say like 5 clouds.
5 clouds?
Yeah, I don't want 0. Because you got to have...
A little bit of shade.
Just a little bit of shade once in a while. Yeah, I'm going 5 clouds.
5 clouds is the perfect amount of cloud cover. I'll think about that.
What's the right amount of clouds? I love it. All right, well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're back every night now with the Sabres being done for the season. There's really nothing with them coming up until the draft lottery, which is just over or under a month away, June 2nd. So playoffs will be on the mind, Bills off season, whatever's left, whatever else we can drum up. Maybe we'll draft something at some point. Draft weather.
You have like infinite possibilities. You take a sunny day with 5 clouds. I take a sunny day with 4 with a second pick.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And come back for the nightcap again tomorrow night at 7 o'clock here on WGR.